The RIS, I'm sure many of you know, in Pali, the language of the original Buddhist text is metta, M-E-T-T-A. It's usually translated as loving kindness. Sometimes it's translated as love. The literal meaning is friendship. I had this funny experience yesterday coming, I was in Vancouver and flying to Seattle. It's my everlasting disgrace, I guess. And you go through the airport and you actually enter customs and immigration in the Vancouver airport. So on some level you're back in the United States, and I kept thinking, if I take out my iPhone, am I going to be on my domestic plan or am I going to be on my international plan? It was sort of an interesting little reflection on the arbitrary nature of borders. You know, where does the United States begin? They say it began there. But it was very funny. But anyway, so, I've got a line for immigration up there, and the woman I was speaking to said, what do you do? And I said, I'm an author. And she said, what kind of books do you write? I said, well, I write books about meditation, I write books about Buddhism, and I write books about love. And it's so interesting, it felt like when I said the word love, it's almost like her face became a kaleidoscope, even though it was like, all this stuff shifted. And it was kind of a beautiful moment of connection, which is, sad. I don't think I have that trouble getting back in. It was just this kind of final recognition of like, oh yeah, we could use some of that. That's a good thing to be writing books about. That's a good thing to be communicating about. She didn't say welcome home. I like it when they say welcome home. Come back into the country. Nonetheless, it was a beautiful moment. And I think in so many ways it is what we are looking for. We want a sense of connection. We want a sense of belonging. We want to be able to offer a sense of belonging. And so that discovery is really, in a way, that's our work. There are great problems, of course, with using the word love, because it's so complicated, which means so many different things. Sometimes we really do frankly mean a medium of exchange. You know, I will love you as long as, I will love myself as long as. And so, that's the more common state. We also know it's fragility. It's breakability. It's not something that we can sustain. I mean, really think about it. I will love myself as long as I never make a mistake. Something like that. So how long is that going to last? Whereas when we talk about metta, we talk about something that is something we can access despite circumstance. Something that's renewable and therefore sustainable. That's the nature of loving kindness as we explore it. Compassion, which is the second of the Brahmaviharas, is the trembling or the quivering of the heart in response to seeing pain or suffering. It's a real movement of the heart. And I find it's an extremely subtle state. It's not so easy. I'm told that if you Google compassion, one of the very early things that pops up is fatigue. And compassion fatigue. I keep meaning to try that. So think about that, rather than compassion upliftment, compassion unification, power of compassion, we get compassion fatigue. And there's a reason for that. Of course, many reasons for that. So that's a very powerful exploration as well, which we'll, you know, we'll go into. Sympathetic joy is the ability to have happiness in the happiness of others, rather than feeling thwarted by someone else's success, jealous, envious, as though something had been taken away from us. And that kind of contracted reaction is so common. Very often we see someone's success or good fortune and we fall sway to the voice which commonly arises in us, like, ew. I would be happier if you had a little bit less going for you right now. Like, you don't have to lose everything, but if life could just dim a bit. It's not easy, really, to have actual joy in the happiness. So it's easy for some people, which I find kind of noteworthy. You know, some people seem to just have that capacity quite naturally. But for most of us, it's not that easy. And that it's not impossible, however. It's quite possible. And it takes challenging many assumptions we might hold about aloneness and about competition, about what strength is, and deprivation, and all kinds of things. And if we actually challenge those assumptions, we do arrive at a place of tremendous joy in the happiness of others. And then the last of the qualities is equanimity, which can be confusing, since of what I was first saying, Verma, studying and practicing these states, which was, you know, 14 years or so after I started meditating at all. And so I was kind of, you know, new the order and all that, but I could never figure out, like, what's that equanimity thing doing there? It seems so puzzling to me. I could get the emotional resonance between the first three. And the first three, for example, are often talked about as practices of generosity. It may not be material generosity. It's like generosity of the spirit, to give our appreciation, to offer our gratitude, to wish well, you know, to have compassion, to extend compassion. They're all practices of generosity. So they're often, like, actual material generosity is used as an example so that we can feel our way into different dimensions of these three states. So I could see how they fit together. And then I thought, what's that equanimity thing doing there? But when I got to Burma and actually began practicing, then I could see, I could understand how equanimity really is. It's almost like the secret ingredient in many other things. And in some traditions, like in certain Tibetan Buddhist traditions, they begin the exploration and the practice of the pranayamas with equanimity. You know, as I was trained in Burma, equanimity is the last one that's talked about and actually practiced, but in some ways I think it is there all along, whether recognized or not. Equanimity means the balance and sport of wisdom. So it's not like a repressive, horrible insistence on not feeling anything. It's not like that at all, but it's the way we have perspective about things because of wisdom. We have more space. So my favorite example of this, which we'll also talk about much later, is to sense something about the balance of compassion and equanimity. Because all of these states are talked about ultimately in a kind of balance. And so that example from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition also, they use it in a completely different context. They use this as a meditation instruction. Actually, we can practice a little bit that way too. The meditation instruction is, look at the thoughts and feelings that arise in your mind as though you were quite an elderly person sitting in a playground watching children play. Look at the thoughts and feelings that arise in your mind as though you were quite an elderly person sitting in a playground watching children play. So I use it really in this other context. So let's say you are quite an elderly person and you are sitting in a playground watching children play. The fact that you're quite elderly means you've lived a life. You've seen a thing or two. You've probably let go of a lot. You've seen a lot of change. And then you have the scene at the playground where you see this little kid that's completely freaking out because they broke the shovel. The perspective of your life years, of your earned wisdom, doesn't make you all cold and mean. It's not like you go over to the kid and you say, hey kid, it's just a shovel. You know, wait until you have like arthritis or something. It's not like that. There's warmth, there's caring, there's tenderness, there's presence. And there's also some space. It's not like you fall down on the ground sobbing with the kid. Because you know, shovel's grand. That's the nature of things. We don't always get what we want. Life moves. It changes. So there's both incredible tenderness and care and an ability not to be defined by the circumstances of the moment, because there's more perspective, there's more wisdom. And I realize, as I often say, that I, as a person, as an individual, if I was seeking help from somebody, and I told them my very sad story, I certainly would not like them to say, hey, it's just a shovel, you know. But if I told someone my really sad story and I fell down on the ground sobbing, I'd be very unnerved. I'd be like, whoa, this is really bad. This is worse than I thought. Even I can't stand it. I want that combination. I want warmth, tenderness, caring, and I want something bigger. Otherwise, I don't think there's any way out, right? I need to see something reflected. It doesn't even have to be verbal. It could just be in their eyes. I want to see something that opens the door to a sense of possibility, another vantage point, a different kind of balance. So that's equanimity. And so even as we talk about these other states and look at them, it's always going to be woven in. Because that's what makes one of these Brahmaviharas able to be itself, rather than fall into a more distorted version, which is very easy to fall into. So that distorted version, for example, of loving kindness is said to be attachment. And so when we talk about attachment in this context, it doesn't mean the nice kind of attachment, you know, that we like to talk about, not bonding, nurturing, having appropriate attachment relationships and all of that. It really means an effort to be in control, a kind of insistence. Well, again, we go back to generosity. You know, what happens when we give someone a gift and then we're kind of like, all right, thank me. Thank me more. Appreciate this. Put it on right now. Tell me that you've been waiting your whole life for this book. You know, you're all those things that just through the force of habit, of course, quite commonly enter into that act of giving. And it's the same thing with this kind of generosity as well. Like, okay, you know, I'm sure we do loving kindness meditation through the silent repetition of certain phrases. So the phrases are easily commonly something like, may you be happy. Right? So with the tinge of attachment, it's almost more like, okay, may you be happy by, let's say, 6 o'clock. You know, that's, you know, a good hour and a half after today, and so That gives me time to kind of forget about you all tonight, and I move on to someone else tomorrow. Or maybe be happy in precisely this way, which I have now deemed the only path for you toward greater and authentic happiness. Or maybe, you know, so that all of the other elements can so easily enter in, and we need some equanimity for a gift to be a freely given gift. And that doesn't mean, equanimity doesn't mean indifference. And of course, we give someone a gift, we would love to be that. It's not a kind of wild desire, you know, it's like, it's okay. We would like to be that. But what happens when we're not? Do we withdraw? Do we refuse to give anymore to anybody? Is our whole sense of who we are and all that we will ever be contained in that need to be fed? If so, we're in trouble. Right? Because look at how out of control this world is. Look at how people behave. Even ourselves. You know, so we can be, we have some measure of peace about that. Doesn't mean indifference. Of course we have preferences and there are ways of being that we appreciate. But it's never under our final absolute control. So how do we give a gift? And where do we get the joy of giving? Those are the kinds of things that point to the need for equanimity in all of these other practices. And another thing we really look at are our assumptions about the nature of these qualities of the heart. Do we think they make us weaker? I seem not sure here. You know, but too often we do have that idea, or maybe in a certain situation we have that idea. Can we understand the power of these qualities and also skillful and varied and creative ways to manifest them? So loving kindness doesn't imply to us only saying yes. And please do move in. And okay, I am going to visit and stay 2 weeks. And I am, you know, so that we understand that we're not confined in some way or constricted by developing a more loving heart. We're actually opened into a whole variety of manifestations that don't leave us weak and limited in some way, that it's really very, very powerful. That's our worship. Do you have any questions or comments? I don't have anything to say.